We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
This podcast episode is brought to you by Coors Light. These days, everything is go, go, go. It's nonstop hustle all the time. Work, friends, family expect you to be on 24/7. Well, sometimes you just need to reach for a Coors Light because it's made to chill. Coors Light is cold lagered, cold filtered, and cold packaged. It's as crisp and refreshing as the Colorado Rockies. It is literally made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So when you want to hit reset, reach for the beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Celebrate responsibly. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado.
And welcome to In the Know, the Hornets 24/7 podcast. Your knowledgeable hosts are Michael McNamara.
Me and a grizzly bear, I'm betting on me.
And me, Ryan Schwan.
I've been playing some Dungeons & Dragons because I'm really cool like that.
Let's get it started. All Hornets, all the time.
Welcome to the show. The Hornets just finished a week going 1-1, beating the Bucks, losing to the Lakers. Both games were convincing. So, Michael, we're also going to be called the Pelicans. What do you think of that? Let's start with that. Pelicans. So you are a devoted fan of ostriches. You're terrified of them. How do you feel about pelicans?
I think it's pretty similar. I think Deadspin was dead on with the post. If anybody hasn't read it yet, I definitely would. But pelicans are fierce. They're a perfect killing machine, as this article, you know, so definitely pointed out. And I don't know. I just think this whole idea. I never have a problem with people not liking something, but again, coming from a philosophy background, I have a problem when the arguments are weak, and some of the arguments of why people don't like it, that the name doesn't sound fierce, and then yet in the next sentence they'll talk about, you know, great traditional names like the Lakers.
Right.
Or I mean, we have a team in baseball that, you know, has recently won a World Series, has a long-lasting tradition, and they're named after a pair, you know, a piece of clothing, like the White Sox are intimidating. And, you know, Sox, I guess, are so intimidating that they did it twice. We have a White Sox and a Red Sox. I mean, just saying that it doesn't sound like an intimidating name, if that is a qualifier for, you know, whether or not a team should be a mascot, we've got to get rid of at least half of the names in professional sports.
Right. I mean, Lakers, they were called Lakers because they came from the land of lakes up in Minneapolis.
Yeah.
I mean, that makes no sense at all, being called Lakers in L.A. I don't even know what a Laker is, even if it's talking Minneapolis. It's like a Pacer. What is a Pacer?
I mean, and then even staying with Pelicans, I mean, people have no problem with the Pittsburgh Penguins.
Right.
Miami Dolphins, I would say a Pelican is much more intimidating than any of those. So whatever, I don't mind when people say that they liked other names for different reasons, but for people to say that they don't like Pelicans and then have a, you know, just such a weak reason why, you know, I just don't get it. I think Jason said it best. in his conversation with Henry on the True Hoop, which I think was fantastic, that, you know, essentially the franchise is going to have to build a legacy in the strong, and the, you know, the name will be as strong as, as that franchise performs on the court and the crowd gets behind it. I mean, I think of so many of the iconic names of anything, you know, how they would look if they were introduced today, you know, a group of four guys coming together and forming a band and calling themselves the Beatles. If we had never heard that name before or what came with it, would just seem absolutely ridiculous and sound stupid, and all their friends would beg them to change the name.
Yeah. So I'll say this. When I first heard Pelicans, I was not impressed. I mean, I didn't, like, hate it, but I wasn't like, yay, I'm going to be rooting for the Pelicans now. But the more I think about it, I think there's, like, there's some cool stuff there. I mean, it's like a real classic feel, and I do like kind of throwback classic things. But I'll also say, I mean, there's the nicknames for it. People are worried about that, but you can call it Pels. You can call it Cans if you want to get drunk. And if you're a Twilight fan or you love like all those emo werewolves, you could say Lycans, because that's like lycanthropes, which are like werewolves.
Wow. That's pretty embarrassing.
Stretch.
Yeah, that's embarrassing that you know that.
I have never actually seen a single Twilight.
Oh, okay, yeah.
However, my sister-in-law, she calls herself a Twitard, and watches every single, like when the last one came out, she went and watched a marathon at the actual theater. I feel sorry for her.
Okay, yeah, I like some of the possibilities. I like the idea of Austin Rivers and, you know, Ryan Anderson trying to get to the foul line more.
Oh.
You know, I think there's something there. I think, I don't know, I think it'll be interesting whether the Hive gets changed. I mean, right off the bat, do you think it's more likely going to be the Nest or the Perch?
I would go with Nest.
Yeah, Nest.
It's got a more homey feel.
Yeah, I don't know. Yeah, and then, well, yeah, I guess the box seats or club seats or something could be the Perch. I don't know. I think it's absolutely ridiculous. I mean, we're a couple years removed from people saying that Thunder was the worst name they had ever heard. Flash forward a couple years later, now not only does nobody have a problem with it, but there was literally a movie that came out last week starring Kevin Durant called Thunderstruck. So it's not only, you know, now accepted, but it's actually marketed as, you know, a film name. So I don't know. I just can't see being that passionate one way or the other about it, you know, that any name would have been the greatest thing ever, you know, as it's so fear-inspiring, and these guys who get paid tens of millions of dollars are, you know, at the end of the day, it's going to come down to defeating them based on the name on the front of your jersey. It's just, I don't know. It's just, it never really has mattered to me. What makes me laugh is how people, you know, seem to want to jump off a roof up to something so minor and, I think, in the long term, inconsequential.
I hate the name Thunder, by the way. I hate the name Thunder. Don't like Heat. Don't like Jazz. Particularly in Utah.
Yeah.
I don't like any of the names that you know, like, what do you call a player on that team? A Jazzite?
Yeah, stuff like that, and stuff like you know,
a Heaty.
So you see Kobe, you know, going for 30,000, and now the debate is where does he rank amongst all time Lakers? And that's just weird saying, you know, name the top five Thunder of all time.
Right.
Who's the best Thunder of all time? Like, yes, in some ways it just sounds weird, but you know, win a couple of championships and your name will be as legitimate as ever. I mean, I still think a Knickerbocker is crazy. I still think there's so many crazier names than Pelicans that people have not only accepted but grown to love. I love the proposed logo looks for the Pelicans. I mean, I think it looks, you know, as cool as anything out there in that department. And then we'll see what they do with the colors as far as, you know, officially with the predominant ones and how they, but
yeah, red, gold, and navy, I mean, it sounds really weird to me, but there's a lot of room in there, too.
Yeah.
So we'll see how that looks. I think it was Basketball Jones' podcast. They mentioned that, you know, it struck them as kind of like a one of the wine and gold Cleveland Cavaliers when they had, like, the wine and gold, and then they had, like, a blue color.
Right.
And I don't know if I care for that color combination, so I'm hoping for something different than that. But it could be good.
I think it's ridiculous for any of us who make fun of our wives for watching soap operas or something to the equivalent. And now here we are, supposedly hardcore sports fans, arguing about what colors are the shirts of these little men will be running around in. Like, it's so ridiculous. We're here to talk basketball, not colors and logos and different animals and which one's more fierce than the other. Like, this is just getting way too metrosexual for me.
I hope they get the darts and the pants right. Otherwise, they might have, like, a feminine shape.
Oh, God, yeah. This is just, it matters so little to me, but I, you know, it is so fascinating to me from a psychological standpoint of how much men who are, and I know we have a lot of women fans, but they're not commenting on our blog like the men are, but how much that, you know, men who are supposedly so hardcore into sports, I mean, this thread has far more comments and views than any that we've ever talked about. And we're talking about a logo and colors and what a uniform will look like. Like, come on, let's talk about hedging on the pick and roll. Let's get back to being the man that we are.
So I think there's one good thing about this. You'll never pick the Grizzlies to beat us again, though. Because you've said you're not scared of bears, but you're scared of ostriches, and pelicans are similar.
Yeah. Yeah, because that's what it comes down to. Forget the X and the X's and O's.
That's right. So, since everybody seems to like this so much, we have now a call in line. So if you have something to say, give us a ring. The number is 504-322-3333 and drop us a message. As long as it's not too crazy, then we'll see if we get you on the air for the next podcast and ask any sort of questions or make any sort of comments. And if we like it, we'll get it out there.
Yeah. Try to keep it PG-13. We have some kids who listen with their mothers and fathers. So try to keep it responsible, you know, go out to Bourbon Street, enjoy it, and come back. And if you still have that question the next morning, once you've sobered up, drop us a line.
All right. So actually, let's talk some basketball, since you seem to be just really keen on doing that instead of talking about these Pelicans anymore. So we have two games. We'll talk Milwaukee first. The Hornets ran away with this one in the third quarter and crushed them again in the fourth. Brandon Jennings looked good for most of that game until he was jacking up stuff at the end. The rest of their team, not so great, including your boy Monte Ellis. So do you still want Monte Ellis to come over and join the Hornets?
For Eric Gordon, yes. But in any other situation, no. But I, my point just with him is that, you know, so I think it's interesting. So it finally came to fruition. I've been beating the drum on this in prior podcasts. There was an article out today, and it's been called the Kobe assist. Have you read this yet?
Yeah, I took a look at it.
Okay, so basically what the Kobe assist is, what I've been saying is, these guys who are volume scorers, who take the ball to the bucket, draw two or three defenders, miss their shot, but that leads to an easy offensive rebound and put back for their teammate. That should be an assist, because it's, you know, doing the same thing an assist does. It's getting a player on your team an open look for an easy basket. So I just still think that there's some value in guys like that. I don't want Monte Ellis on this team, but I'll tell you, I do, and more than ever, and you're right, Jennings had to put up some stuff at the end of the game when none of his teammates were helping, but I don't know how you could watch this game and see how lightning quick Jennings is on both ends, how much he bothers somebody like Grievous Vasquez, and just, you know, can't, you know, just imagine him running the pick and roll and being able to get around that edge with Ryan Anderson and floating up lobs to Anthony Davis. Obviously, he was hitting from deep this game, but that'll come and go. I'm not counting on that long term. But he tried to make plays for others, and I saw like four or five times in this game he would just throw his hands up like, what are you guys doing? All right, I'll take this. And then he would make a gorgeous shot. But that's just a guy who more and more every day, you know, hasn't even hit his prime. But I would love to have that guy on this team.
Right. And, I mean, you brought up the Kobe assist thing, and I agree, because I always felt that there was a lot of benefit to when guys just drove to the basket and put up any sort of garbage. And honestly, Austin Rivers, I mean, I am hesitant to talk nicely about Austin Rivers since he's, for these last two games, 0 of 10 for 1 point. But he does get to the rim. He does draw multiple defenders to him. And even though he's throwing it up at the glass and there's not really much chance of it going in, the very fact he's pulling those defenders over makes it much more likely that we will get a putback. So I agree. The kind of guy that Monte Ellis is, though, while he'll have like a couple flashy drives to the basket with spins and flip shots that are like, whoa, he's so amazing, most of his shots are actually 20-footers, and those don't help you. Because the defense, the guys who are at the rim are still going to be in the same places. They're still going to be boxing out the same way.
Right.
So, but Brandon Jennings, I agree, 100%. Everything I see about Brandon Jennings, I mean, I just look at him and think if he had some sort of guys who could play off of him really well, like when he had Ilyasova last year and Ilyasova wasn't a schmuck, or when he gets out there with Dunleavy. I mean, it becomes completely different. He's got someone who can play off of him, and him breaking down the defense isn't purely to get himself somewhere. It's to get someone else something. So, yeah, if you could do what you said and have shooters and he could easily be a Tony Parker kind of player, especially if he can figure out how to finish at the rim a little bit better.
So if it comes to this summer and essentially you find out that 4 years, $50 million is the magic number, and the Bucks say we won't match, or essentially we'll do a sign and trade if you give us Vasquez and a future lottery protected first, would you, all three of those things, would you do 4 years, $50 million, give up Vasquez and a future lottery protected first for Brandon Jennings?
Yeah, I would.
Okay.
Well, I mean, I hesitate for one reason. It's because we still got Eric Gordon on the books, and I don't know what the hell I'm going to do with him, and it's going to be really tough to pay Anderson, Jennings, Gordon, and then when Anthony Davis needs to be paid. That's going to get a little rough.
And that's what's good is that, you would basically, you'd be in the final year of the Jennings deal and the Gordon deal would be done. So when Davis is time to pay.
It's true. It's timed exactly, isn't it?
Right. So, yeah, I think that's and going back to your Austin Rivers point, I mean, yeah, he did do that in the Lakers game. In this game, he didn't get many shots on the rim because I think Larry Sanders blocked everything he –
Yes.
He put, I mean,
I felt bad for Rivers because he was trying. He was lofting, push shots like 8 feet from the basket, trying to get tons of air on it, and Sanders would still get up and stuff it.
Yeah, and the next night, I mean, even Dwight Howard. I mean, Vasquez and Rivers got floaters over Dwight Howard. Dwight doesn't even have that spring. Larry Sanders, just an absolutely freak of an athlete. But I think that's the problem with the Bucks is they have like. Five Larry Sanders, not, any other ones that are as good, but where are they supposed to get their offense from? I mean, John Henson is, the same player as Sanders, Ekpe Udo, Samuel Dalembert when he's there. It's just they've got the type of players that I like, but you should only have one, maybe max two of those guys on your team, and this entire roster is filled with
Luke Richard is even that same sort of lanky, non-offensive-minded defensive player.
Yeah.
And he was murdering us on the off. I mean, he was crashing the offensive glass like crazy.
Oh, yeah, yeah. He had 7 offensive rebounds in 20 minutes. I mean, his offensive rebounding rate, I thought, was a misprint, but he was at an offensive rebounding rate of 39%.
Yeah, and it was pretty ugly because, I mean, it wasn't just like he was flying in out of nowhere and they weren't boxing him out. I mean, they were boxing him out, and this 6'7", slender, small forward who's only been back for two games with an injury was, like, ripping the ball from the hands of our big men.
Right, and so I mean, here's the thing, and, you know, I will be the first to admit Robin Lopez has performed much better offensively than – you know, I anticipated he would. Again, in this game, 8 for 10 from the field. He had 21 points on just 10 shots. There's nothing there, you know, even if those shots are uncontested or for the most part layups or short jumpers, that is still immensely impressive. But in 23 minutes, he got 0 defensive rebounds for a 7-foot center.
And he got 4 offensive rebounds, but 3 of them, or 2 of them were misses of his own that he just grabbed back off the rim and put in.
Yeah.
So, I don't know. I don't even know what to say about Lopez. He is like, what I'm used to talking about big men, slow-footed big men, is I always have like the same things I end up saying about them. They're slow-footed. They can't defend that. Their hands are like stone. Yeah, maybe they can rebound the ball every once in a while or block a shot. I mean, Lopez has, like, a very odd skill set. He's slow-footed, he's awkward, but he actually has really good hands at catching on the move, and he can finish around the basket despite his awkwardness. He's, like, just a really weird basketball player.
Yeah, but here's my thing, and I know the regular season still matters, but I guess my mind is always on postseason basketball because it, you know, to me, that's all that's going to count at the end of the year. And I keep thinking, okay, what is going to translate if and when we become a playoff team and what won't? And to me, I just find it very hard to believe that when, you know, we play a very good team in a 7-game series, that Robin Lopez is still going to be able to score and have nights anywhere close to this. But, you know, his weaknesses, I think, will be even more exposed. I mean, you just cannot have a 7-footer on the court in the playoffs who cannot rebound the basketball unless, you know, they're draining threes or doing something else that is highly efficient. So as much as Lopez has proven me wrong in the regular season, I still can't see a scenario in which when you're battling the best of the best of the best, that you could put a 7-footer who doesn't rebound and can't defend the pick and roll, which is all playoff basketball is, out there for more than 15 minutes. I can't see it.
Well, I mean, I don't necessarily agree with that. There have been teams in the past that have made it all the way to the end who didn't have a 7-footer who could defend the pick and roll and weren't great rebounders. Rick Smits comes to mind. I mean, there are a couple other ones,
and
but what they
fantastic always fantastic offensively as far as
right.
being able to get it, and that's what I'm saying. So yeah, if Lopez had something that I think would translate, you know, to counter that, but I mean, do you see Lopez going 8 for 10 for 21 points in a playoff game when teams are actually ratcheting up the intensity level and have scouted him and know all of his tendencies?
No, probably not. But then I think what we're even discussing here is not the reality anyways. I think the idea is we'll see Robin Lopez play 16, 18 minutes, and we'll see Anderson and Davis play 36. And the more I see Robin Lopez play, and yeah, I mean, I recognize he's not a great rebounder and he's a bad pick and roll defender, but the more I see Robin Lopez play, I'm perfectly happy with him as a backup center for this team.
See,
he'd be great.
I guess I would be happy, but it's not just about that in a vacuum. It's about your spectrum of options. And to me, if he keeps playing this way in the regular season, his trade value is going to be immensely high. I mean, there's already been rumors linked to Boston, and now ESPN came out with Milwaukee would be interested today, and I just, you know, to me, if there's a guy who's not going to grow much more and he's not going to be one of the top 4-5 guys when you become a contender, I think you're always looking to sell when they're absolute at their absolute peak. This was my argument with trading Darren Collison after his rookie year. I said his trade value would never be higher. And, you know, I just think that way with Lopez and, frankly, with Vasquez. I don't think they're big parts of this team when we're contenders, and I can't ever see either of their trade values being higher. So would I mind them being on my team? Of course not. But if their trade values are this high, I am definitely exploring what I could get for them and comparing that to the 16-minute version of Robin Lopez versus would I rather just get some other big who's maybe not as good as Robin Lopez for those 16 minutes and, you know, bide my time, but Robin Lopez gets me back something really valuable in a trade if I do it now.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, as far as I'm concerned, these Hornets are going to have to move one of their backup big men for a guard at some point. I mean, unless they're willing to start moving out their draft picks.
Yeah.
I mean, or they're really patient, which means, you know, they're going to wait till their money is freed up, and that, you know, this summer. And that we hopefully get a draft pick that's a guard, which isn't that promising looking in this particular draft. So, I mean, if they want to be able to upgrade the backcourt significantly, they're going to have to give up one of their big men. And we've said this before. I mean, Jason Smith isn't lighting the world on fire with his rebounding. He's been fairly poor at it. But I would still rather have Jason Smith on the team than Lopez if I had to make the choice.
Right, and I do think Lopez has more. I think Jason Smith is one of those players that has immense value to the Hornets, but his value around the league isn't, you know, as high as he is to the Hornets. He's more valuable to the Hornets than he is to any other team.
So we're talking Jason Smith.
Uh-oh.
So I got a bone to pick with you about a certain tweet you made.
Right. I'm blaming you. He's not been the same since he coughed in his ear, destroyed his equilibrium. I think if something's off, I put it all on you.
Yeah, he hasn't been hitting the shots, been a little off. So I'm going to do something drastic here.
Uh-oh.
And it's not particularly kind of me because he was very nice to come on our podcast to talk to me and have me cough in his ear like that. But I'm going to have to unleash the curse, just like I did with Brian Roberts and Austin Rivers. And I might have to re-unleash it on Austin Rivers soon, but got to be careful. Can't overuse it. But Jason Smith, you suck.
and
if you don't start hitting shots immediately, I think the D-League's in your future, mister.
That's right.
And against all rules in the NBA because you're past the point where they can send you down to the D-League, but you're going to be in the D-League, I'm telling you.
And can you do a preemptive one on Lance Thomas? Because he might be joining us soon, and he's playing really well. I would hate to see him come on the podcast, you jinx him, and you know, this current hot streak he's on to go away.
No, they can't do that. they have to actually be playing poorly. So, and Lance Thomas is not. I mean, if anybody has been a surprise, these – past few games, it's been the play of Lance Thomas. Because, and it's no surprise, I haven't been a huge Lance Thomas fan. He's a fine player for us, to, you know, at the end of the bench. But in certain situations, he's been pretty. I mean, I'm still not a fan when he's being forced in small lineups to guard opposing centers or strong power forwards. He can't do that yet. But putting him on like a big small forward, like the Carmelo Anthonys of the world, like LeBron James, who's coming up here soon. He will willingly body them and make them work defensively because he never stops moving. And that's pretty much all you can ask for from him. And he's played pretty well doing that these past two games.
Are you saying that he might be moving into that elite fifth big territory?
It is possible he could be an elite fifth big.
Yeah, and I mean, is there any way?
Is there an elite fifth mini big?
Yeah, I mean, he does look like he's lost. I mean, I know that he looked like he said he put on weight, but it looks like he had lost weight to me in order to try to play some small forward, but I like having that guy on the team. I don't know, you know, what role he could really play as years go on. I mean, I don't see an incredibly high ceiling or even a ceiling that would make him a regular rotation player, but there's much worse that you could do as your 11th and 12th man than Lance Thomas.
Yep. There's out there a lot of energy. I mean, I like I said, can't say much against him. He draws a couple free throws every game. And if you just want somebody to come in and leave a lot of energy on the floor for 10, 15 minutes, you can do a lot worse.
Right. And I will always love him because, I mean, people forget how close we were from, you know, from not getting Anthony Davis. That game against the Houston Rockets, the last game of the season last year, if the Hornets win that game, they're drafting fifth or sixth. They wind up losing that game. They get Anthony Davis. And, you know, there was no bigger culprit or, you know, I guess the way it played out, somebody that we should be happy played poorly than Lance Thomas in that game. So I still will always give him partial credit for, undoing what Bellinelli did in that Golden State game and getting us that number one pick.
So here's a question for you then. You brought up Anthony Davis. We had a little diatribe last time, or I did. I was whining and complaining about it. Anthony Davis looks like we're not going to see him at all, and probably Christmas is about when we're going to get him back on the court. We haven't heard anything reliable about Eric Gordon. So if those two guys come back, and we spent a lot of time in this the preseason talking about this, that essentially if all three of them are playing, we do have three guys who are top 30, because I don't think there's any question in anybody's mind now that Ryan Anderson is probably one of the top 5-6 power forwards in the entire league at this point. And if anyone still has questions about that, then you can go with the Hornets back to Charlotte, and we'll stick with the Pelicans and Ryan Anderson. But those three guys, when they're going to be on the court together, our offense is going to be crazy. We're already not bad. So this is the strange part about this team. I never thought I'd say this about Monty Williams' team. This team is the worst defensive team in the league, and it's not even close. They have the worst defensive efficiency in the league because they always let in these three-pointers. But their offense is already at league average. If they bring in two more elite offensive talents, which Davis actually has shown he can be, and we know Gordon is, this team could be extremely fun to watch every single night, even if they are losing because their defense is terrible.
Wait, is this October 27th? Are we talking about the debut of the Hornets' Big Three? I mean, this is how it should have been from game one of the season, and we're still postulating and thing about what these three guys would be on the court. I mean, look, I completely agree. And not only are they all individually good, but they actually complement each other. So we saw, you know, Wade and LeBron it took them about a season and a half to really figure it out, you know, offensively and come together because their games overlap. Like, there's no overlap amongst these threes. It's not like Davis and Anderson are two bigs that, oh, how are we going to get them both on the post, or they both need the ball in their hands to be effective. Like, this is almost as complementary of a group of three offensive players as you could, if you were to just draw up skill sets that you could possibly think of. I mean, a penetrator, a guard who's fantastic in the pick and roll, a big man who... Again, if people think Ryan Anderson is just a shooter, they're not watching the game. I mean, he's an elite shooter, but he's getting points all over the court. And then a guy like Davis who can rim run, who could hit the jumper, who could handle, you know, better than most guys who play his position. I mean, to me, they're just skill set wise complementing each other in addition to just how good they are individually. Like, I think you're right. I think if they could get 20, 30 games on the court together and get a rhythm, that could be one of the best offensive units in the NBA.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm even excited about the idea of seeing Vasquez and Aminu playing next to those guys, which, you know, I just feel like maybe Aminu not perfectly, but it's a good fit. And you just sit here and, I mean, we say, why did Del Demps sign Eric Gordon? But then if you just stop and think about what could be, you see all the reasons why he wanted to do this. And I hope it just doesn't bite him.
I need a guy who could hit the corner three as my small forward in that offense. If I'm talking about an ideal fit, mm-hmm. I see the pick and roll and the ball rotation, I see so many open opportunities for a corner three in this offense. And maybe it doesn't have to be a small forward. You know, maybe it could be a point guard. There's guys like Booby Gibson who, you know, were fantastic in Cleveland with LeBron on that corner three playing the point. I mean, maybe it could be a point in that corner. But when I try from a coach's point of view to think about setting up plays for those three in the offense and think about what spots are going to be open, I just think that corner three is going to be wide open, and I can't see Vasquez or Aminu as reliable guys there. So for one of those spots, I need a guy who could drill that corner three.
Jason Smith took one last night.
Yeah. I mean, it was – I think he was giving a shout-out to all his Hornets 24/7 listeners. I mean, we brought it up to him. You told him that, you know, he should fear a grape, and he hasn't shot a three. And I don't know about his fights with grapes lately, but he listened to you on the corner three.
And he ran. I mean, that play was drawn up. When I saw him take it, I was like, wait, whoa, was this just like an accident? The play was drawn up that way. He ran to that corner, set up there. They ran a screen so they could catch the ball and take that shot. And it was a shame he missed it, but, you know, hey. So here's the potential. We'll just have Jason Smith sit in the corner,
yeah,
and Al-Farouq coming to sit on the bench.
And see, this is why I would love to see Roberts off the ball, because I think Roberts has a beautiful stroke. People have, maybe rightly so, compared him to a Gennaro Pargo. And Pargo, especially in Game 7 in that San Antonio series, almost single-handedly brought us back with that corner three. Obviously missed the big one that would have tied it. But I would love to see Roberts there, you know, and playing off the ball, because I think if, you know, long-term, if Roberts is going to stick with this team, it would be, you know, in a Pargo, more off the ball score, just occasionally playing the point. So, you know, I would like to see him take it, because he is, I think, the prettiest jump shot of all the guards on this team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't even feel that bad when he takes a long 20-footer, which is, you know, something that I always feel bad about. So
yeah,
you don't feel like he's definitely going to miss it, which is, I mean, that's even better than I ever felt about Pargo. Because Pargo, when he took his 20-footers, I was always like, oh, please stop.
Here's the thing that I see people getting most, well, not most upset about, but nobody ever argues this point. In this game against Milwaukee, we see Xavier Henry get 20 minutes. We see something fairly similar the next game against the Lakers with Henry getting 19 minutes. Can you tell me why Darius Miller is not getting these minutes? Do you think he's not working hard in practice, or do you think this is the last-ditch effort of Monty and Dell saying, we are going to give Henry minutes, and when he fails this way, we can never question whether or not we gave him the proper opportunity to, you know, make it in this league?
I think that's exactly what it is. I think it's Xavier Henry getting his chance to prove that he can do anything, and he's not grabbing it. And it's not surprising he's not grabbing it, but, I mean, I fully expect that this experiment, unless suddenly he blossoms out of nowhere, I fully expect this experiment will be over in about 4 games, and that suddenly you will not see Xavier Henry get off the bench at all, and we'll see Darius get the exact same chance. Now, here's the thing. I'm not saying I expect Darius to grab it any more than Xavier Henry does. I see the potential there for Darius Miller to be something, but the production isn't anywhere near what you'd expect. So I don't know if he'll be any better. he won't be worse. Xavier Henry is just, he doesn't have a clue what he's doing out there. It's really, really weird.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, why not give him one last chance now? Make sure that you left no stone unturned. And, you know, Darius Miller's on a cheap second-round pick contract. You keep telling him. I mean, Monty's getting this message out there that Miller's not giving him the effort every day that he wants. You keep building that fire up in Miller. Eventually, you know, you tell him, well, you've proved yourself, when in all reality you've just given up on Henry. You start giving him the minutes. But yeah, I mean, last coming from this Milwaukee game, my last thought, and the thought as I watched this, obviously it was great to get a win, especially a big win where it wasn't a nail-biter in the last couple minutes. But in this game, we see Henry get 20 minutes. We see Roger Mason get 26. You know, I just – Lance Thomas gets 15. I just think of this exact Hornets team that we saw this night, minus those three guys and plus Anthony Davis, Brandon Jennings, and Eric Gordon. And, you know, just got really excited when I thought about that. So.
Yeah, and even not even necessarily Eric Gordon, just do the Brandon Jennings, Anthony Davis, and some mid-level proven younger veteran guard. Doesn't matter who it is, just someone who is going to give you at least a PER of like 12 or 13, and this team is so much more difficult.
So let's imagine, because we're always on the side of Eric Gordon will never get healthy, so let's be optimists for this one. Mm-hmm. You know, if I told you core of Brandon Jennings, Eric Gordon, Anthony Davis, Ryan Anderson, you know, they took some magic elixir. Let's say it's NBA 2K13. We shut all the injuries off across the league. Those are your core four. Where does that rank overall, and where would that rank amongst young, you know, 26 and under core fours?
I think that immediately puts you contending for a 4 or 5 seed in the Western Conference, which means you're on a par with the Clippers, Denver, and as far as potential, because the team is going to be developing going forward, I mean, I have no idea what Anthony Davis is. He's already a monster.
Right.
So I expect him to continue to be a monster, because there wasn't anything in those games that I was just like, no, that can't continue. So, I mean, the team has all the potential to be right there with the Thunder and, like, 3 years.
Yeah. I think that core four and all of those guys being, you know, I mean, Davis would only be 20. Anderson and Gordon would just be hitting their primes. Jennings still not even in it yet. Just thinking about that. And it could be done. Like I said, a 4-year contract at around $50 million would still have the Hornets in very good shape as far as the cap and not coming anywhere near the Lux tax. So, you know.
Well, you're saying $50 million, but let's just go. I mean, because if Jennings continues this play, do you think he won't get a max contract?
I just don't think by principle that, I mean, we saw these. I think the Bucks will say no. These point guards in your class who have played, you know, at least as good of you as not, if not better, took under $50 million this year. I don't think that Ty Lawson gets 48 and then.
Well, yeah, I mean, I 50. Think I agree there that Milwaukee has set their price for him, and he'd have to do something drastic to change it. But we got to remember, there's what, like 13 teams or 10 teams that are probably going to have pretty close to maximum salary space this summer.
I went through them all, and the only one that really is in the market for a point guard is Dallas. And I don't think Dallas is giving him a max deal from, you know, I check in with my Shark Tank every week. I follow Mark Cuban on Twitter. He is not giving a max contract to anybody but a max player.
Okay.
He wouldn't give Jen. I mean, so, no, I think 4 years, you know, anywhere between 45 and 52 will be the number. And, you know, Milwaukee keeps fading down after the hot start. I mean, this was a team that was number two in the East the last time we played them, you know, and now if the playoffs were to start today, they wouldn't even be in the playoffs. So, you know, as good as he's playing individually, I think if they wind up getting the 11th pick in the draft this year and are a middling team, I can't imagine their owner saying, yeah, let's give this guy a big contract and continue being a middling team. I would see them wanting to do something like a Vasquez in a first rounder and a sign and trade, and I think 4 years 50 would get it done.
Okay. So let's talk other teams coming up.
Hold on, I know.
Wait, you want to talk the Lakers game?
All right, this is okay. Let's not talk Lakers game that much because it was depressing. But I feel like, other than your comment that people should go follow Charlotte if they don't think Ryan Anderson is a top level player, I still don't think we have done him a proper service. So, you know, in the two games that we've seen so far this week, Ryan Anderson goes 21 for 33 from the field, gets you a total of 53 points. I mean, I just, and then is a monster on the offensive glass as well. I just feel like that we get so sucked into talking about, you know, nitpicking on little things from time to time, but we have an elite player on this team that we got for a ridiculously cheap contract in retrospect, and the Hornets aren't winning right now, but it just feels so good to have a player who is this good, who hustles this hard, and who the refs still don't respect yet, just absolutely killing it for us every night.
Yeah, I mean, he didn't stop at all in that game either. He was minus four for the game, and he played 35 minutes. And this is a game that, you know, we got absolutely crushed in that third quarter while our starters were on the court. So, I mean, it tells you that, you know, while he was out there, he was working every minute of his time out there. And I don't know, his stroke is just so nice to see. It is just an amazing player to watch.
Yeah, and he's not just a shooter. Like, I love all the other little things he does. He really knows how to drive baseline and use his body to kind of back the guy who's covering him off of him and use the glass on that layup. Like, he's very resourceful. We see this mid-range face-up game. So the Hornets, if you just want to Google on YouTube, Google UCLA offense. And you'll recognize it because the Hornets run a lot of it with those two, the double high post options. When you see both, you know, when they start the plays with both Lopez and Anderson posting up high and then the guard, you know, passes it to one of them. That's the staple of a UCLA offense. And the Hornets run that a lot. And I think it's going to be amazing when they run it with Davis and Anderson. But right now they're getting Davis the ball or Anderson the ball about 18 feet out. He's facing up and either looking to pass or he could just face up and hit that jumper. And it's not as beautiful as Dirk's was, but it's the beginning of what I imagine will be an evolution in that part of his game. And, you know, he's hitting it right now and he's just dangerous in so many different ways offensively.
Yeah.
And he's still not getting respect from the refs. It's ridiculous.
So you want to hear about lack of respect? here's my respect for our guards in that Lakers game. Holy cow. Vasquez, 7 of 19. Mason, 1 of 16. And he missed three wide-open three-pointers. Wide open. No one looking at him. No one near him. Then, of course, Brian Roberts, 0 of 6. Austin Rivers, 0 of 5. Xavier Henry was probably our best guard in that game.
Yeah, he hit a 3.
He hit a 3. He drove, got 5 free throws, even though he can't hit them. He grabbed 6 rebounds. I mean, and this is where, you know, conspiracy theories, you know, come out of me. It's like, did Dell Demps sit in his little office at the beginning of the season and say, I know Eric Gordon's not going to play, so let's make sure this backcourt is terrible as possible and not bring anybody new in so that we can get a high draft pick next year. Do like the little Montgomery Burns finger thing.
Yeah, I don't know, because I don't... So maybe a high draft pick for a purpose of trading it, but I it would be... And I'm not saying that they're going to go vet. I think they'd go young vet if they were to move it. But I just you see how big of a project Austin Rivers is. And the Hornets are going to stick with him. And Monty came out today and said, you know, we're giving him time now. So 2 or 3 years down the line, he's the player that we need, essentially sacrificing today for tomorrow. I don't know if they could go out and draft another 19-year-old. This year, I mean, this is too early to be talking about this, probably, but I don't know if Dell really sees, you know, another 19-year-old as more of a solution than he sees it as a problem, because everybody thinks about the Oklahoma City Thunder, but teams like the Sacramento Kings and the Clippers before they got Chris Paul were drafting a 19 or 20-year-old in the top 7 every single year, and it did nothing for them, so... I love a good conspiracy theory. I just don't know if I could buy this one.
Right. Okay. So, I mean, yeah, it's silly. But here's the one thing I want to say about this Lakers game, just overall. The Hornets lost by 16. It felt like it was a runaway by the time the fourth quarter came along. But if the Hornets play just the way they've been playing normally, I mean, I've heard and read some things like about this game, like, oh, the Lakers are showing they're actually a good defensive team, and all Lakers are showing what they're... The Lakers were terrible defensively in that game. The Hornets murdered themselves by missing some of their shots they normally make. Like I said, that Roger Mason, all three of his three-pointers, there wasn't anybody even trying to contest him. He just missed them. They're wide open. And he doesn't normally do that. Vasquez had 3 three-pointers that were wide open that he missed, and he's a better shooter than that. And typically, Brian Roberts, I mean, his shots he was taking weren't any different than he normally. It wasn't like the Lakers had hounded him into taking a shot he doesn't like or doesn't normally hit. He just missed them. And you could say the same thing with Jason Smith. Jason Smith took a lot of those mid-range jumpers. I mean, he did get blocked a couple times by Dwight, that you could say that was the Lakers. But I didn't walk away from that game thinking, wow, the Lakers' defense really killed us. I mean, even our free throws. We're the best free throw shooting team in the league, and we went 10 of 18 in that game.
Yeah, I wasn't impressed by that Lakers team at all. That was the worst defensive effort I had seen by an opposing team, even worse than either Milwaukee won or the Phoenix game. I thought they were actually horrible. The way I saw that game was a lot like you described it. The Hornets missed a lot of wide open shots. The refs bailed Kobe Bryant out a couple times in the first half, and that kept it close. And then the Lakers came out at the beginning of the third with a little run, and this, you know, young, inexperienced Hornets team was just, you know, scared and in awe of.
And they folded.
Yeah, and they absolutely folded, but I did not walk away with that game impressed by the Lakers at all, especially that in, you know, version of them, because to be honest, that is Kobe Bryant, Dwight Howard, and then a bunch of guys who maybe belong somewhere between 8 and 12 on a good team. Like, look at the teams that the Hornets are playing this next week, and we're going to talk about soon, in Memphis and Miami. Like, how many of those guys on the Lakers that are getting heavy minutes would get any time in either of those rotations? Like, Chris Duhon wouldn't get a single minute from Memphis or Miami. You know, I think guys like, you know, Anton Jameson or Jordan Hill would be at the very end of the bench. So, you know, it's just, I was not impressed by the Lakers at all in that game. It's disappointing that we lost by that much. And what's shocking to me is this is the 6th double-digit loss, and something that you kind of brought up with Jerry V of, you know, is this team worse than last year's team? Because last year's team was not getting blown out. And this team already 6 times at home have double-digit, you know, losses. And in 6 out of the 10 games that they've played at home, they've lost by double digits. So, That's kind of surprising.
Yeah, I mean, and we did lose some veterans. I mean, there's no question. There's Jarrett Jack, even Ariza and Okafor, even if they weren't playing for parts of last year when the Hornets actually played their best game, at least they're on the bench able to say what they need to say. This team's, I mean, and I talked to Jason, when I was talking to Jason Smith, this team's oldest vocal, because I don't see Roger Mason as a particularly vocal player. This team's oldest, most vocal leader is Jason Smith. And he's, you know, 26 years old. He's not like the star of the team in any way. He doesn't command respect as the best basketball player out there either. So I don't know how effective he is. And there isn't anybody really else. I mean, Grievous Vasquez, I guess.
Yeah.
But, I mean, and Ryan Anderson is definitely not. I think of Ryan Anderson as a pretty quiet guy. So I don't know if this team has the vocal leadership it necessarily has to have. And I think that's the kind of thing that will put – and you could say, oh, it's Monty's fault. No, I mean, it, to some respect, yeah, it is Monty's fault that he's not able to maybe push this team to not give up. But you got to have the veteran leadership there, too, as well, to show the way. And Jason Smith tries. I mean, I don't want to kill Jason Smith really about that, because when he's playing, he's always hustling, and he's always saying, come on, even if they're down, he's working hard. But I don't know if the rest of the team has that.
Yeah.
So
yeah, and
maybe that's something we need. Something to look for.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. Another 19-year-old is not going to address that problem. So I still think that you know, maybe getting a good pick and eventually trading it for something quality is somewhere they're more likely to go in the off season. And just one other thing that you brought up, and yeah, I mean, there's a little bit of debate amongst Hornets fans of how much Monty is to blame, and I guess the more I think about it, I hate that word. Like, who's to blame for the Hornets playing bad? Can't we just say that people have to improve at certain things? I mean, I think Monty would be the first to admit, and he has admitted several times, that he has a lot to learn and a lot that he can improve upon. I think that you could both say that Monty's not to blame and say that he needs to get better at making in-game adjustments and halftime adjustments and so on and so forth. I don't think those things are mutually exclusive. I don't think just because he has to improve on that we're saying he's to blame. You know, when I blame somebody, to me, I think of somebody who has the capability to do something but chooses not to. I think of a Baron Davis, a Stephon Marbury, somebody like that who has all the talent in the world and has shown that they could do something, but they just don't put in the time and effort to do that. I blame that person. But, you know,
right,
when somebody else needs to improve on something, you know, I don't think that's blaming them.
Yeah, and I get what you're coming from there. I mean, the one thing that always irritates me is how coaches get the blame whenever things are going badly, even when, I mean, I don't think, can anyone honestly tell me that if they look at the team that played against the Los Angeles Lakers, that their starting five, Ryan Anderson, Al-Farouq Aminu, Robin Lopez, Grievous Vasquez, Roger Mason, take those five guys, are four of them starting for any other team in the league consistently? Like 25, or let's even say, are 15 teams in the league going to be starting anybody other than Ryan Anderson from that group?
No, I can't see.
So, I mean, the whole thing I have there is at some point, and it has been strange that it's been the third quarter, and so people immediately say, oh, adjustments. But at some point, this team's talent level will tell, and there's nothing Monty can do about talent level. He can try to get them in the right place to succeed, but he's not the one out there missing shots. He's not the one out there who doesn't know still, after how many games we played now, 16 games, that when a person is wide open on the three-point line and they're a three-point shooter, you should probably run at them. And this team still doesn't know that.
Yeah, and it's not only that, but I think this team and all young teams are capable of the snowball effect of, you know, once a team, I mean, a veteran team like the Celtics, if somebody makes a 5-0 or 7-0 mini run on them, they don't panic. They've been there before, whatever. I see a lot of panic in this team, you know, especially coming out of the half when a team makes a little bit of a run, like they start trying to do too much or get worried, and there's just no steadiness. And that makes sense for a bunch of guys who aren't starters, you know, realistically in this league, who haven't started much, who haven't played much in general. And I just think that they're more, you know, open to that snowball effect happening to them. And that's what I see a lot of times in these quarters that are so one-sided.
And I watched, so the Lakers game, I knew the result before I watched it. I watched it on tape delay. And my wife came downstairs and said, "Oh, your team lost." I'm like, "Thanks." So anyway, so I already knew they were going to lose. So I went and looked, and I saw that in the third quarter, yeah, they got torched. And I was like, okay, I'm going to watch the third quarter extremely carefully, see what the Lakers did to the Hornets that made them just fall apart so badly in the third quarter. And the run happened. There's two runs. The first one happened over the course of 7 possessions, and 4 of those possessions were the Hornets tried to make a standard play, and their handoffs or their passes were badly directed. So, like, Jason Smith was moving one direction. He had to reach way back to catch it, fumbled it. It fell down on the ground. Vasquez dribbled it off his own foot. They were all 4 of the 7 plays that went bad were just the Hornets were sloppy. It wasn't like the Lakers were going after them. They were just sloppy. 2 of the possessions were they went hard after Grievous Vasquez. They had to get the ball up to Roger Mason to try to create something, and there was so much time wasted that we ended up getting nothing out of it. And then, of course, there was a strip of Austin Rivers who didn't know what to do. This isn't like the Lakers saying, "I'm a god of adjustments." This is just the Hornets not being able to execute carefully.
Yeah.
And you can say, well, Monty didn't prepare them, but really, what else? I mean, what can you do if you're a coach except go out there and say, here's the play you should run, and then trust the player to run it? And when you have a young team like this, they're going to make mistakes, and you just hope that next time they won't make that mistake. I mean, Austin Rivers learned eventually that Kobe Bryant thought he was a schmuck and was going to run from halfway across the half court and try to steal the ball from him. I mean, the announcers, David Wesley at one point said, wow, Kobe Bryant's like almost being, you know, disrespectful in his way of attacking Austin Rivers, where he would run all the way across that half court to try to steal the ball from him. And, you know, after the second time, Austin Rivers learned that maybe I should keep an eye out for the assault of the Black Mamba. But, yeah, I mean, this is the stuff they got to learn.
Yeah, and I'm all fine with them learning it this year. And, you know, I see no reason to push the panic button and start giving up, you know, these young guys' minutes to people who can marginally improve the team this year. So that's why I was glad to read Monty's quote today, where he basically said that he's not going to shorten Rivers' minutes at all, that, you know, this is going to pay off in a couple of years. And I know that there's tons of Hornets fans, you know, that have already given up on Rivers. I'm really not in the mood to, you know, to convince anybody. I'll just say this is how I said it would play out. I told you about how bad he was at finishing at the rim at Duke. That article is out there at Grantland.com. He was horrible at the beginning. He figured it out and adjusted, got better. Maybe history repeats itself, maybe it doesn't, but I don't see the point in giving up on some of these guys so early when it wasn't about this year anyway. You know, I don't see why she get so bothered by the losses when we all knew coming into the season that it wasn't about this year. So
all right.
That's it. So moving on to the games this week.
Which team you want?
I'll go Memphis because what's interesting is I think to the casual NBA fan or, you know, maybe even You know, fans who follow the game regularly, they think Memphis has, you know, a big three on their roster, and they're right. It's just most people are wrong about who those big three are. It's Randolph, Gasol, and Mike Conley, who in this league of point guards where we talk about who the top point guards are and everybody rattles off the same 5 to 7 names, like Mike Conley needs to start being in the discussion, at least in that second tier. And if you're just going purely based on performance, you might even be able to argue him in the end of that first tier where people automatically put Deron Williams in because they remember Utah Deron Williams. You know, you look at what Mike Conley's doing, and, you know, he's steadily improved every year. That team, Memphis, does have a big three. It's Conley, Randolph, Gasol. They have a volume scorer in Gay. And then, you know, they have a bunch of role players led by an elite defender in Tony Allen. But this is as top-heavy of a roster as any other, you know, when you really come down to it. They have a big three whose PERS are all at 20 or slightly above. And then they have Rudy Gay, who has a PER at, you know, the league average of 15, and then nobody else at or above, you know, the league average, just a bunch of guys who go in there and play their roles. But their big three wins them games and has them with the best record in the NBA.
Yeah. So last year, I never had a really great feeling that Mike Conley was a good point guard. He never struck. I mean, even right now, his passing numbers aren't amazing. Part of that's misleading, of course, because Marc Gasol runs a lot of their offense, and his passing is great. So it's kind of hard. I mean, Conley's not put in the situation as often as most point guards to run a pick and roll and pick up easy or moderately easy assists that way. But I remember watching him last year and thinking, wow, Conley is a really good defender. He's not particularly strong, but he's really quick, moving side to side and staying in front of people. And he can pester the hell out of you. He's getting more than 2.5 steals a game right now. And his shooting numbers are amazing. And one of his big problems in the past was he didn't take the three. He would only take it sporadically. He would prefer to catch the ball and drive. And he's not a magnificent finisher. He's fine, but he's not magnificent. And this year he's taking 4 threes a game, and he's hitting them at 45%. And his efficiency, this is, you know, one of those things that you're just like, oh, wow. Michael Conley is scoring 1.4 points per shot. To put that in, you know, in context, the Hornets, Ryan Anderson, all of us love Ryan Anderson. He's an extremely efficient scorer. He's only doing 1.3 points per shot. So Conley takes 10 shots a game and produces extremely well. So, and then you're right, Randolph and Gasol, Randolph's working himself back into it. This team's just offensively is very impressive, and defensively, especially with Tony Allen out there to shut down whatever perimeter attack you have.
Yeah, I mean, we have been talking offense, but defensively they are elite. They're number one in the entire league in defensive rating. They have the size. So as the league has gone more and more small ball, mm-hmm. they have size. Down low, Gasol, you know, is not a guy that's going to block a lot of shots, but his size and just both his width and Randolph's width in the lane are going to keep a lot of people out of there. But Tony Allen, an elite on-ball defender, Quincy Pondexter has never really become, you know, an offensive player, but he's getting, you know, 24 minutes a game for this team. He's the key guy off the bench for this team. He's sixth on this team in minutes, so he's essentially their sixth man. And he doesn't really give you anything offensively, but he's fantastic defensively. You know, when they put Allen and Pondexter in the game together, they could just shut down the perimeter, and then it's impossible to go inside with all that size that they have. They're fantastic defensively. The only thing that they really don't do well on the defensive end is rebound. I mean, they're 24th there in defensive rebound percentage, and you know, you just have to wonder if That's because teams are missing so many shots that they're, you know, just getting to the boards more, or, you know, being deflected and getting their own rebound back or whatever. But that's somewhere where you might be able to attack Memphis. But really, you know, defensively, they are the best in this league, and they have an offense that's, you know, well above average and very efficient. So
they have a very solid steal rate, a good block rate. I mean, this team is gonna be hard to score on them. And I'm a little terrified of Tony Allen hounding Grievous Vasquez on the perimeter.
Yeah.
For that matter, I'm kind of terrified of Conley. And so here's my thing, though. I say that. I said the same thing about the Bucks. Am I overrating Grievous Vasquez being hounded into turnovers?
Well, I mean, it's not just turnovers, but to me it's just like the Thunder didn't always turn him over, but what they did is they took the ball out of his hand and then they fronted him and denied him from even getting the ball in the half court. So there was entire possessions against the Thunder where our point guard never even touched the ball in the entire series, and that's just going to ruin your offense. So I don't think it just has to be steals. If Allen hounds him to the point where he has to give up the ball and not touch it, that in itself is going to affect the offense.
All right. So you brought up Poindexter. This is the last thing I wanted to say about the Grizzlies. The Hornets also had Jared Bayless. Jared Bayless is, seventh on the team in minutes. So basically their top two guys off the bench, Bayless and Poindexter. They're both Hornets. Poindexter was sent out for Vasquez. Bayless was sent out for Jarrett Jack. Mistakes here? Anything you regret?
No, I mean, I think Bayless specifically is in a perfect situation where, you know, it's a defensive-minded team. He could come in off the bench and just be, you know, a spark plug type of scorer. And overall, he's really not doing well this year, but he has had two games where he's just gone off and, you know, kind of helped win those games for them. So you could afford to have a hit or miss guy like Jared Bayless when you have such a large margin and room for error. Like, this Hornets team has no room for error. Think about the Clippers game that the Hornets won. They had to play almost a perfect offensive game to get that win. They miss one or two three-pointers or have an extra turnover here or there, and they lose that game. There's no margin of error, room for error. So Memphis has that. They could afford a guy like Bayless, and he's good for them, but no. And, you know, for Poindexter, again, if we went out on the trade market right now and you tried to, you know, you solicited offers for Poindexter versus you solicited them for Vasquez, I think Vasquez could get a lot more in return. And since I see, you know, the Hornets eventually going that route with Vasquez, I would rather have Vasquez for, you know, that reason alone.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I just wanted to bring it up and let people think about that for a second. Technically, if you really wanted to go, Daryl Arthur is back from injury. And we had rights to him, too, at one point.
Yeah, so. But we sold him to get the money to get James Posey, one of the best signings in Hornets history.
Yes, James Posey. So let's move on. The next game we get to play after facing the 13-3 Memphis Grizzlies, we get to play the 12-5 Miami Heat, the LeBron James and company.
Yeah.
So, yeah, they are actually surprisingly not that scary this year so far. Almost like they're not trying super hard at the moment. LeBron James is doing his usual thing. His scoring is a little bit down. Dwayne Wade has been struggling with a bit of a foot injury, which every year he seems to have that issue, and eventually he comes back. Bosch is doing his normal Bosch-like thing, and Allen has been one of the, you know, most amazing knockdown shooters. He's 1.5 points per shot. I mean, if anything is going to be terrifying in this team, it's the idea of Ray Allen tearing us apart from three-point range. I mean, he might set a record going, like, you know, 20 of 21 from three against us. Fortunately, Shane Battier, who's their other best three-point shooter on the team, he's going to be out. So we only have to worry about one knockdown shooter. I guess Chalmers is okay. Unless you want to talk about Rashard Lewis, who we also could have on our team this year.
Yeah, it's just a barrage of former Hornets coming back to haunt us. I mean, I guess it's time. We got it's kind of like a Christmas Carol theme here with the ghosts of Hornets past.
So with Rashard Lewis, we could be paying him $23 million this year if we wanted to, and getting 16. Well, if he plays like he does for the Heat, 16 minutes a game. 6 points, 2 rebounds.
Yeah,
sound like it's worth it.
Yeah, that's max salary worthy. No,
it is so crazy how bad he is compared to his salary.
Yeah,
just.
I'm sorry. I mean, the guy got paid.
He got paid, and then he was told to stop taking his PEDs.
So So there's a couple things. One, you said that the Heat aren't that terrifying. This is a team that has an effective field goal percentage of 55%, which is amazing. Number one in the league, fantastic. To me, that's a little terrifying. Yes, their defense is, I think, saying below average would be nice. But this is a team that more than any could go off, you know, have a 13-0 run in like a minute and a half.
So let me change that. I don't look at this game and say there's no way the Hornets could do it, because I could easily see the Miami Heat deciding it's the Hornets.
Right, just like they did, it's the Wizards. I agree.
Right.
Yeah, Oklahoma City is still young and haven't won their championship, so they don't have as many nights like that. This Heat team is going to have probably 8 to 10 nights like that over the course of the season. Maybe we're one of them.
Right. That's our opening. So what I want the Hornets to do is to find out some way to, like, get them out on the town before the game and feed them bad crawfish.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that could happen. We could pull a Celtic pride and just kidnap some of the players. Whatever we want to do.
I thought of this. Have, like, some seemingly innocent Hornet, Austin Rivers, maybe, take them to meet some pelicans, but make the pelicans mad, because the pelicans are aggressive birds.
They are. It all comes.
Maybe they'll attack.
It all comes full circle with you, Ryan. I like it. So just a couple things I want to hit on with this. One, Dell Demps had a chalk talk recently, which I think is fantastic, where he talks back to some season ticket holders and answers questions for about 45 minutes. And the issue came up with Grievous Vasquez, and Demps's answer was that he could see Vasquez as a starter on a championship team. And he specifically pointed to this Heat team and basically said a rhetorical question, but one that the fans decided to answer, in which he said, I mean, the Heat won a championship. And who do you think is better, Grievous Vasquez or Mario Chalmers? Now, we're biased as Hornets fans, as Hornets followers. Vasquez is obviously putting up better numbers this year because he's having to do a lot. But in your opinion, who is the better player between Mario Chalmers and Grievous Vasquez?
Wow. I would almost call them equivalent.
Okay.
I mean, I wouldn't say that Vasquez is clearly better, just because, I mean, and Chalmers has been having a down shooting year, but he's shot a lot better than he has this year in the past. But Chalmers, defensively, he's a good defensive point guard. And Grievous Vasquez isn't.
No, Chalmers is great. I think good is, I mean.
So, I mean, I would say that Vasquez has a few things he does better offensively than Mario Chalmers does, and I would say there's a bunch of things Mario Chalmers does better defensively than Vasquez does.
Yeah, and
so, I mean, equivalent?
And not only that, but again, back to my thing of the postseason is all that matters. We've seen Mario Chalmers step up and play well in the postseason and in the NBA Finals. Haven't seen that from Vasquez, so that would give him the edge.
I've had one big game for the Grizzlies. It wasn't the finals. It was like a second round that one year.
It was first, but yeah, okay. And then the other thing I want to bring up, so again, everybody's so worried about the first 20 games of Austin Rivers as if that's indicative and, you know, whatever. Norris Cole, 20 games into last year, was supposed to be the next big thing. He had a couple big performances as a rookie. I mean, this was a guy who had a couple years of college and came out and was almost a finished product. Had a couple, you know, good games, and now he's, you know, this next great thing. He's only going to get better. He's young, and he's only going to get better. This argument I hear all the time. Flash forward to a year later, he's a below-average rotation player at best, giving him 20 minutes, shooting 37% from the field. Can't hit a three, which, again, he was hitting those first couple of weeks last year. And, you know, it's just one of those things that I guess I just say to keep in perspective when people, you know, just make projections about a player, good or bad, from a first couple of games. I mean, I honestly remember being a young Hornet fan, and I want to know in the comments how many people remember this guy, how many go back as far as I do. But if you want to look it up, I only know from memory. I didn't research it. But George Zedek was a beast his first month and a half in the NBA. I mean, I'm almost sure he won at least one Rookie of the Week award, maybe a Rookie of the Month. But this man was a straight-up beast his first month and a half, his rookie season and as a Hornet. And for those of you saying, George Zedek, who? That's my point exactly. He went to win absolutely nothing after that. So just a reverse way to look at the Austin Rivers thing for those people who are just deeming the first 20 games of your career is going to, you know, show you what that player is going to become forever.
I brought this up in the conversation with Jerry V. Kemba Walker. His first 20 games as a Bobcat, which is on a bad team, kind of like the Hornets are. He played 29 minutes a game, shot 37% from the field, 36% from three, got three free throws for 72%. So he went for 12 points and four rebounds a game for his first 20. And then, of course, if you continue looking through the rest of his season, I mean, like, April, he shot 35% and 29% from the floor. In March, he shot 37% and 21% from the floor. I mean, he had what I would look at as a complete bust season, but he was a rookie. And if you look at what he's doing right now, again, he's not a world beater, but he's good. He's a player that you would like to have on your team.
Yeah.
So give the guy a chance. Maybe he'll turn into something. I'm not saying Austin Rivers will turn into something because he's posting worse numbers than Kemba Walker did. And he didn't have the college stats to say 100% he was going to do it. But you can see the skills while he's on the floor that he could turn into something. He's getting to the basket. If he sinks half those shots that he's getting there and taking, he's a usable basketball player.
Right. And At Duke, his first couple of months, he averaged 0.59 points per shot at the rim, which, I mean, you don't even have to be into advanced stats to know that that's absolutely horrible. But by the end of his time there, he was averaging 1.14, which, you know, that in and of itself is average, but that shows that he was actually finishing at an elite level at the rim to bring it up that high. I mean, we saw the same thing at Duke. It is such a hard transition. I don't know why people think that going from the ACC to playing the best players in the world. I mean, on one level, you're playing guys who are going to be future accountants and real estate agents. And then on another level, you are playing the best in the world, and people act like if they don't adjust and play well after, you know, 20 games, that we should just throw him out with the bathwater. But yes, Damian Lillard is playing well, but Damian Lillard wouldn't have played well if he came into the league 3 years ago.
You know? Right. And there's also, I mean, you could just look at Austin Rivers for a second. He's not one of the physical freaks. He didn't come into college or the NBA in a man's body. He didn't. He still has to fill in. I mean, he's not LeBron James, who at age like 12 looked like he was a 34-year-old man. So, I mean, we got to give him at least enough time to fill in and develop a final man's body where he can actually contend with some of these guys who could probably break him like twigs if they ever needed to.
And we got to get the right colors on him. Talk about the jersey colors that are going to matter.
Right. So, even if you don't want to talk to us about the Pelicans, if you want to just call us and tell us to shut up about Austin Rivers or have something else to say about him, again, we have a nice new number for you to give the ring to. And that number, again, is 504-322-3333. Look forward to hearing from you. Anything else you want to talk to them about?
No, that's it. Wish everyone a good night and try to be nice, on those voicemails.
Right. Thanks for listening to In the Know.